Thank you very much. I'd like to talk about, the first thing I'd like to talk about is the change in the patterns of ownership of patents and the way in which large companies begin to accumulate and amass a larger fraction of the patents that are granted every year. This is a radical shift away from an intellectual property marketplace, infused with small innovators towards one in which large multinational operators own a growing share of U.S. patents. The next slide shows that trend. Number three, slide number three. It shows that in the last few years there's been a growing accumulation by the large companies. For example, the top 300 own over 50% every year, receive over 50% every year of the patents that the U.S. Patent Office grants. Individual inventors on the other side, on the other hand, as you can see in the dotted line, are losing market share of patents granted. In other words, they receive a smaller fraction of granted U.S. patents every year. In the next click, you'll see that in comparison, the individual EPO patent share of individuals is only 2/3 of 1%. In 2005, there's a European report that shows that individual inventors own or receive 0.67% of granted EPO patents. Point here is that we're moving in that direction. We, meaning in the U.S., are moving in a direction where patenting will be the sports of kings. Large companies would be essentially controlling the ownership of patents, and it would no longer serve the purpose of protecting small entities and startups. The next slide, slide number four, raises the question as whether this bill is a jobs bill. The proponents of the bill have argued that this passing this bill will help generate 200,000 jobs, providing no evidence that that is the case, no information as to how that would come about, nor do we know which provision in this particular patent bill will cause that growth and new jobs in America. If it is thought that the PTO will be able to foster these new growth of jobs by issuing more patents, well, we know that none of that is true. The bill contains no guarantee that the PTO fees that it will collect, and it will raise its fees, would in fact be used by the PTO and not be diverted. That provision was taken out of the bill when it came to the House. So it's unclear. In fact, we basically have all the evidence that this will essentially be a jobs killer bill. All you have to consider is who are the companies that, or the patentees, that are likely to benefit from it, and who are the companies that actually add jobs. Next slide, slide number five, shows that the net new jobs generation in America is exclusively, essentially, done by small or startups, just startups. On average, you could see that about 3 million jobs net are generated in America by startups. Existing companies, on the other hand, for the most part, do not generate new net jobs. They actually cause or not, they actually lose jobs. Now, that is not an indictment of existing companies. It's just the nature of the dynamics of formation of companies and movement to new startups. The point being, though, is that if you are talking about new jobs, you've got to be looking at startups, and you've got to look to see what the patent bill will do to startups. Startups actually universally oppose this bill. The next slide, slide number six, shows that small businesses are indeed have generated 4.4 million jobs net since 1999 to 2008, and with virtually no offshoring of jobs for small businesses. So startup and small companies indeed have generated domestic new jobs. Multinational companies have generated new jobs indeed, but not in this country. 2.5 million jobs are generated offshore by these multinational companies, and 1.7 million jobs domestically were lost within those multinational companies. So as a net job generation in America, proponents of this bill are pretty much not the ones that will generate the new jobs. So in a way, this flies in the face of arguments or assertions that this bill will be a job-generating bill. If that were the case, if the bill would have helped small companies that do generate new jobs, we would have seen their support for it. We don't. We see their objection to it. On the other hand, we see support to it from those multinational companies and large firms. The next slide, slide number 7, shows a typical coalition that supports this bill. These are actually the most vocal companies who push for this legislation, the 21st Century for Patent Reform. But they are a group of companies that are pretty much established, average age of 100 years. They're huge. They have resources everywhere. And in fact, their part of the push for this legislation is significant. These member companies have the characteristics of entities that have negative net job contributions to U.S. jobs. So basically, we're saying that the most strongest supporter of the bill are companies that do not generate new jobs in the U.S. The youngest company in this group is 18 years old, and the average is over 100 years old. Next slide shows more specifically the relationship to invention. In other words, this shows the fraction of patent applications which are invented by foreign inventors, that have foreign inventors named on them, at least one inventor. As you can see, members of this 21st Coalition are shown in some lines here. For example, General Electric has gone to the point where 25% of their patent applications named to foreign inventors in 2005. They're approaching the 40% this year. Procter & Gamble, another example, has been rising in their share of foreign inventors. Now, this is an indication that a lot of invention by these companies does not occur here. It's happening abroad. In and of itself, these companies cannot be faulted for moving a lot of their R&D offshore. You know, it's the interest of their shareholders that they have to worry about. But to say that this will generate new inventions and new activities in the U.S. market is somewhat disingenuous. Ron here will talk about the offshoring of R&D and tie this up with some more information that he's got. The point here being is that if you look at all published applications of all assigned all patents assigned or patent application assigned to U.S. entities, that's down to the 15% or 17%. So we do have a variation, significant variation by these entities and so on. The other companies I'm showing here, Henkel is a German company and Air Liquide, a French company, they're members of the 21st Coalition, all right. They have operations in the U.S., but they do most of their work offshore. Nevertheless, these are foreign companies who are telling through the 21st Century Coalition, telling our lawmakers what the U.S. patent law should be. Next slide, slide number 9, talks about the specific provision in this bill that would essentially increase the incentives for multinational companies to do offshore invention and R&D testing. These activities will now become a defense as a prior art. In many cases where a patentee asserts a claim against an infringer or would-be infringer, accused infringer, the accused infringer may already have had activities and uses it as defense under Section 102, 102B, that basically says if there's public use or on sale in this country, they can show that in fact there is prior art to the invention. The point, though, is that it requires to be in this country. The new patent law permits a defendant to find public use or on sale activity that occurred anywhere in the world. What this means is that a lot of their development work, a lot of their processes in R&D, perhaps testing and perhaps public use and offering it for sale abroad, would essentially permit them to use that as defensive prior art. and a patentee who would then have to challenge that type of evidence, either in depositions, interrogatories, or testimony, taking testimony, would have to do so under rules that govern that type of discovery abroad. And the question is, how do you do that? How do you make this possible? So, in fact, this would make a patentee's work much harder to prove this issue. Now, it's true that it can work the opposite direction, where U.S. patentee is being sued, and they're now able to find more cases of activity offshore. But again, they will have to have the resources to find that evidence and to find it. The point is that this actually makes it much more biased towards those who are already situated offshore in their R&D activities and have the resources to actually bring that art and to present it here. So in that sense, this is a change that would make local patentees and startups and small companies more vulnerable. And that is pretty much the end of my presentation. There's more supplemental Q&A slides that are pretty much self-explanatory, and you can go over those. Thank you very much.